All right, well, we're recording.
Wait, one, two, three.
What was the clap for? You just felt like clapping?
That's actually how you make sure that it's synced up.
Oh, okay, wait, do I get to clap too?
Sure.
Wait, clap. It's episode 19?
Yes.
19. I had to think. I was so big hype to say 20. And then I was like, wait, bitch, slow your roll.
No, 9. The best number.
Why is 9 your favorite number?
I don't know. It's just always been a good number for me, so.
I mean, I'll allow it. So we're going to pray to Jesus, Satan, whatever you pray to. This goes up in time because my computer, which by the way is a 2012 MacBook Pro that has a fucking CD drive, did not want to function at all. So if this isn't on time, it's not my fault. I mean, it is my fault because I should have bought a new computer a long time ago, but that's beside the point. Here we are.
Picked a bad day to have a long one.
That's okay. Mine is like medium long. I don't know, it's probably not gonna be like my usual like 80 minutes. It'll probably be like a lot of people actually know the case that I'm covering, but I actually changed cases, so I already had the notes for this case, and then a major development, kind of major development, came out for the case today, and then I was like, oh shit, well, let me just pull up these notes. And I was like, oh, now we got to talk about it. Because I got emotions. And okay. I'm a little hype.
Emotions.
The emotions take me over. Heartache and sorrow. Anyway.
Already a real episode.
Yes. Already a real episode. Listen. Listen. I've got my Mickey pajama pants on. I watched a new episode of the Nitney.
He has his bone. Leave him be.
I didn't know what he had.
He has a bone.
Oh, okay. Our dog is weird. But anyway. Anyway, this week I'm going to be talking about the death of Conrad Roy.
That name sounds familiar. I'll probably
should. You'll know it when I start talking about the case. You're going to be like,
probably.
Oh, that bitch. Not Conrad. The girl who had a very large part to play in his death.
Wait, is that the girl who like texted him and made him commit suicide? I knew that name. Michelle, that bitch.
Michelle Carter, who I'm going to skip to the end because the bitch's appeal for parole was denied today. And I'm just like,
woo.
Suck a dick, suck a dick, suck a motherfucking dick, suck a dick, dick, suck a dick.
No, it's suck a huge or small one, or large or small one.
But anyway, for those of you who haven't been following, the formal name of the case is the Commonwealth versus Michelle Carter, and it's been kind of a huge deal, because this has been one of the more publicized, I won't say it's one of the first, but it's one of the more publicized trials of someone being tried for involuntary manslaughter in the case of causing someone else to commit suicide or having a hand in someone else's suicide. So I'm going to break it down. I'm going to back it up to Conrad Roy III. He was born September 12, 1995. So he was quite literally my age, which is kind of terrifying to think about, but I'm not even going to get into that. So he died July 13th of 2014, and the court case actually, don't you dare bark. Don't do it. Don't do it. My old RA used to do that. My like freshman year RA, if she thought we were going to do some shit, she'd be like, don't do it. Just like that. She actually just got married. But anyway, so he, died by suicide at the age of 18 after a fuck ton of encouragement from his then girlfriend, 17-year-old Michelle Carter, via text messages. And I've got the text messages. Oh, I got the receipts, sis. I got the tea. No? Okay. Anyway. Oh, yeah. I mentioned my Mickey Mouse pants, but I failed to mention my everybody is a babe hashtag Mary Lambert crop top. That's life. It's life. I've met her twice. I cried both times. It was wonderful. Anyway. I have to bring some lightness into this. What are you doing?
Lighting the candle.
Oh.
And then we're gonna turn out the light.
Would you light my candle? For no. Someone who has to rush and edit, I'm really just a hot mess today. It's fine. Ew. So, the case was crazy because obviously, you know, we're at a point in time where I really thought you were just about to set our curtains on fire.
No.
That's a big ass flame.
I don't know why it does that.
Timmy's gonna burn our house down.
No, it was like that last time.
I don't know if our insurance will cover this.
Ah! Is that too dark?
Let me turn my brightness up. Sorry, my head really hurts. You could have warned me. I could have paused the recording. You're making more work for me. Anyway, so it was obviously was a really big case because we're at the point of we're now trying her for involuntary manslaughter. So the Commonwealth versus Michelle Carter involved literally every text message they had ever sent to each other. Emails, phone calls that had been recorded. Keep your eyes out. The FBI is watching. And then even multiple times that they would go back and they'd be like, oh, and phone calls that had been recorded between Conrad and Michelle that led up to Conrad's death. And it was like a whole thing. And then the defense tried to basically turn around and say, well, Conrad had been, you know, seen, a bunch of mental health professionals. And they were like, well, he wanted to die and he was going to commit suicide anyway. And like, it was really, really fucked up. And I'm not
That's
even
a terrible defense.
It's a terrible defense. So it ended up raising like a lot of, you know, people were at this point, you're like, okay, like, he did kind of make the conscious decision to commit suicide and let it be known. The bitch killed him. Sorry, not sorry, but I'm just pointing out all the facts. A lot of people were like, oh, well, he made the conscious decision to commit suicide. And then a lot of people were like, well, no, she kind of pushed him along. And I'll get to it because I don't know if you remember, Tim, what exactly happened. But for people that don't know the full case, I don't want to spoil it. Cause the bitch is twisted. Also, she like halfway through the trial cut all her hair off, and now she looks like a cross between Captain Marvel and Cara Delevingne. She does. Have you seen her with her haircut?
No, I don't give her any attention. She doesn't deserve it.
She doesn't deserve it. But literally, and guys, I'll post the photo. Unfortunately, I'm gonna post the main photo will be of Conrad, Michelle Carter. Carter. See? She looks like a cross between Captain Marvel and Cara Delevingne.
Oh, she does. That's weird.
It's very uncomfortable. And it's not even just like that photo. Like, even before she cut her hair, she looked like Cara. Yeah, I don't know.
She has weird bone structure.
She has weird bone structure, but, you know, that's the bone structure of a sociopath. So I don't make the rules. Anyway, so back to what's going on. So, you know, people were really like the defense tried to argue that they were like pushing the limits of, you know, criminal responsibility. They're like, you can't hold her accountable. She wasn't there. And I'm like, she's texting him let me get to this. So Connor died from carbon monoxide poisoning because he like started his truck and like did the tube thing and like was in the car, and he literally got out of the car and she texted him and was like, no, get back in the car. I'm sorry, that's murder. It is like, I don't know how you have to figure it out. I'm not a lawyer. I don't practice law. I'm just saying that's murder. She fucking killed him.
I still don't understand what the purpose of all of it was, but
yeah, I don't get it either. I think it was like some weird power play, I guess. I don't know. And she basically coerced him into it, and that was the even crazier thing. So, and it gets crazier. So I jumped ahead of myself. I have to go back. Sorry, but he, you know, and the defense even brought up that Conrad was, you know, he was socially anxious when he was attending school, that he was just a naturally anxious person when he was in the classroom, which is like bullshit. Don't pull that. Lots of people are anxious, especially in high school. Like, he died in 2014. So that was probably...
That's when I was in high school.
Yeah, he died in spring of 2014. That was the year you graduated.
Yes.
So if he's a September baby, most likely that was the year that he was graduating, because
he was in my grade.
Yeah.
That makes me feel terrible.
Yeah. So I was born in August of 1995 and I graduated in 2013. So his suicide and everything took place during my freshman year of college. And he graduated in June of 2014. He was actually on the honor roll. He graduated from Rochester Regional High School in Mattapoisett, Massachusetts. I probably butchered the crap out of that, but here we are.
Rochester? Not Rochester? Rochester?
I said Rochester or Rochester.
No, you said Rochester.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the Mattapoisett.
But that just distracted me. But yes, I don't know how you would say that name.
Anyway, so he was, he was an all-around high school athlete in the sense that, you know, he had a sport he did every season. He did baseball. He did the crew team, like where you row on the boat. He even ran track, which, like, props to you if you fucking running for sport, man. I don't run unless I'm finna die or miss a bus.
I don't even run for the bus.
I ain't finna wait that extra hour, I'm just saying. He actually graduated a 3.88 GPA, and he was accepted to Fitchburg State University. He actually made the decision not to go before he committed suicide, so that was something else that the defense argued. They were like, he didn't even have a future plan for himself, he didn't want to go to college, and it's all such horseshit. He
was 18.
Like,
I don't have to have it all planned out.
And that's the really frustrating thing about the way college and high school works, is like, you literally have to know what you want to do for the rest of your life at 17 and 18 years old. Because, like, I was 17 when I graduated high school, and they were like, pick your major, bruh. And I was like, what? I was 17 when I started college, and they were like, yeah, here you go. Like, it's crazy when you think about it. Like, not that 17 and 18, there's a difference, but I'm just saying, like, it's such bullshit that, like, at this age, you're expected to know everything you want to do. Did it just get darker in here?
Yes.
Oh, maybe it was my phone brightness that went down. Anyway. So, Michelle was born August of 1996. She's a Leo. That's all I needed to know.
April is the better A month.
April is the better. I'm born in August.
April,
bitch,
is the better A month.
Bitch, I'm born in August.
And you're born towards the end. You almost weren't an August baby.
No, I was due in September. I came
exactly
early. And something that, of course, came into play during the court case was that she developed an eating disorder when she was 8 or 9. And then she had issues with self-harm and was on prescription psychiatric medication from the age of 14 on. So they tried to say that, you know, because of her mental state, of course.
She's not crazy.
Oh, no, the bitch is crazy, but she still killed him.
Well, no. She's not, like, crazy in the fact that she literally doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah. So Michelle and Conrad actually met when they were 16, or when Conrad was 16, sorry, in Florida in 2012, and they had actually each been visiting their relatives. Probably, you know, grandma and grandpa living their best life in Orlando, because I'm convinced that's where all old people retire.
Yeah, it's cheap to live there.
I'm so serious. I'd be in Disney every motherfucking day. Me and my ECV scooter, okay? Oh, anyway.
Get out.
And then after, you know, they first met each other, they saw each other in person again only a handful of times over the course of the 2 years. They actually only lived like 35 miles from each other in Massachusetts. But they, you know, spent most of their time only texting, emailing, or talking on the phone. They didn't spend a lot of time seeing each other in person.
Y'all are only 35 miles away.
When you're 14, 15, 16, like, what are you going to do? Hop in the car?
He was 18 at the end of this.
At the end, yeah.
18.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I'm not saying it's a requirement, but a lot of people have cars by then. He was in a car. I don't know if it was his. I don't remember that. Might have been his parents, but I don't really remember. But if it was his, sir.
I don't know what he's chewing on.
I think it's his bone. No. It's a ball.
It's a ball. That's what he went to go get. Anyway, but like, that's the crazier thing. So it's like thinking about how close they were, but they were so far. And then, even the other thing, of course, that they found in the text messages is that Conrad actually confessed to Michelle that he'd been physically and verbally abused by his father and his grandfather. And because of that, the first time he tried to commit suicide was supposedly in October of 2012. And that was when his parents first divorced. But this is where it gets a little weird. So because of that, at this point, you know, they're still, like I said, they're texting back and forth. Michelle actually initially tries to discourage him from attempting suicide in 2012 and then again in 2014. And then she's like, you need to get professional help. You know, you need to see someone. You need to talk to your parents. And it's like, it's all there. Like, the receipts are there. This day and age, your texts are not yours. They're the government's. Sorry, sweetie. And it's really weird because she goes from very aggressively telling him he needs to get help to all of a sudden in July of 2014, she's like, yeah, it's just something along the lines. She decided it was a good idea to help him die.
I don't understand.
I don't either. So then in June, Conrad texted Michelle and was like, oh, they should. He said to her, he was like, oh, we should pretend to be Romeo and Juliet. And then and it was claimed that it was his way of checking to understand that they should like each kill themselves. Like, he was his covert way of like having a plan. And I don't even know how, like, at that point, like, this is the shit that makes me want to be like that parent in the future that's like, I read all of my kids' text messages. I don't give a fuck. And like, because we just finished watching a show where the 15-year-old girl was like sending nudes to her like 50-year-old fucking coach or doctor, whoever the fuck he was.
He was probably like 30 something, but yes,
he too old. But like, this is that thing that makes me want to just be like, I see what you're doing. Oh, you just FaceTime her. Okay, I'm on FaceTime too. Like, this is why parents are crazy overprotective, because of bitches like Michelle. Okay, anyway, I got that out of me. So I have a lot of emotions about Michelle. Like, it's just, as someone who's had like my own personal issues with like depression and all that, like, bitches like her, I kind of want to find her and shiver in the throat with like a sharp spork, because you can't take a knife in prison, but I feel like they have sporks and you just sharpen the end and then you shiver right in that little juncture in her throat. That's horrible. Ma'am? I'll cut that out later. I'm just saying.
Just making more work for yourself.
Okay, so then on Sunday, July 13th of 2014, after a string of text messages, Conrad decided that after a stream of text messages between himself and Michelle, that he was going to commit suicide, and then he died by suicide by poisoning himself with carbon monoxide fumes in his truck in a Kmart parking lot in Fairhaven, Massachusetts.
Oh, I didn't realize he was in a Kmart parking lot.
Yeah, he was in a Kmart parking lot. So I actually have like the text that took place between the two of them. So he died on July 13th, beginning on July 12th. So this is where we're starting. And they actually have these not from Conrad's phone, but from Michelle's phone. I don't know why I just blanked on that bitch's name. So
just called her the bitch's phone.
The bitch's phone. Anyway, so Conrad texted and said, okay. And she texted back, Conrad, hey, you there? He texted back, mind you, this is happening between 12:40 a.m. Then at 4:19 a.m. he texts back, hey, sorry, I fell asleep. She texts back, it's okay. Why haven't you done it yet, though? Then he texts back, I'm too messed up to. And then she texts, what are you talking about? He texts, my head. You can't think about it. You just have to do it. You said you were going to do it. Like, I don't get why you aren't doing it. That is verbatim what she texted him at 4:22 a.m. on July 14th or 12th. I'm sorry, 2014. Hello? Nittany, are you okay? Okay, anyway. So then he texted her back. So I guess you... or I'm sorry. So then he texted her, I don't get it either, then IDK. She texted him, so I guess you aren't going to do it then? All of that for nothing? And then he says, I'm just confused, like you were so ready. Or I'm sorry. Then she says, I'm just confused, you were so ready and determined. And he texted her back and he was like, well, I'm going to eventually. And then this is where it gets like, my mind gets blown, because it's like, if someone ever texted me like this, I would not even, I don't even know. So then he texts her, I really don't know what I'm waiting for, but I have everything lined up. I really don't know what I'm waiting for, but I have everything lined up. I really don't know what I'm waiting for, but I have everything lined up.
How many times?
I lost count, but at least 20 times. And he just sent it to her like it was like copy and paste, like typed over and over and over and over and over again. So he's clearly not okay. And she's just like, eh. Like, she's not even fazed by it. Then she goes and texts him back. And she goes, no, you're not, Conrad. Last night was it. You keep pushing it off and you say you'll do it, but you never do. It's always going to be that way if you don't take action. I have more texts to read from this bitch. What the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
What the fuck? So she goes, you're just making it harder on yourself by pushing it off. You just have to do it. Do you want to do it now? And then he texts her back and literally goes, is it too late? And he was like, I don't know. It's already light outside. So then she's like, I'm going to. Or I'm sorry. Then he texts her and is like, I'm going to go to sleep. Love you. I'll text you tomorrow. And then she goes, no, it's probably the best time now because everyone's sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck and no one's really out right now because it's awkward time. Because it's an awkward time. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And you can say you'll do it tomorrow and you probably won't. Love you.
No, don't. Don't lie to him.
Yeah. That was what... Then he texts her back and says, thank you. For what? Fast forward to the next day. Are you awake? She says, are you awake? He says, yes. First thing she says to him, are you going to do it today? Oh, yeah. You should have seen how mad I was reading through these texts. I'm skipping over chunks, but it's like... and he goes, yes, like with multiple S's, but it's not like a yas. It's like a yes. Like he's irritated that she's asking him. Uh-huh. So it makes you wonder, like, was there something else we don't know about? Were there conversations? Like they never met in person. So it's like, if all of your exchanges are over text and email, like maybe there's something that we're just not getting. Like maybe there's something we're not seeing. I don't know. It's just, anyway. So he's like, well, should I do it today? And she goes, yeah, it's less suspicious. You won't think about it as much and you'll get it over with instead of waiting until the night. So this is on July 12th. And it's still early in the morning. It's like 9:30 in the morning. She texts him and she's like, do it now while it's still early. And he's like, well, didn't we say it'd be suspicious while, you know, people are awake right now. And she goes, sometimes things happen and we never have the answers as to why. Like 2 weeks ago, I was willing to try everything. And so he texted her and was like, 2 weeks ago, I was willing to try everything. And now I'm super hesitant. And now I'm worse. I'm really bad. And I'm LOL. I'm not falling through, but it's just eating me alive inside. And then she texts him and she goes, you're so hesitant because you keep overthinking it and pushing it off. You just need to do it, Conrad. The more you push it off, the more it will eat at you. You're ready and prepared. All you have to do is turn the generator on and you'll be free and happy. No more pushing it off. No more waiting. If you want it as bad as you say you do, it's time to do it today.
I still don't understand the purpose of it all.
I don't either. Like, was it some weird power play? Like, it what? I'm trying to, like, I try to understand the headspace sometimes. Like, I think, like, basics, like, okay, with Dahmer, like, he was a suppressed homosexual who was, you know, he had, his parents were divorced, and he had the whole thing where he was dissolving kittens in acid, and it just, you know, his parents weren't necessarily watching him, and it just, like, metastasized into this sickness of needing to dissolve things in acid, and, okay, wait, we still like gay men, and or wait, we still like men, oh, wait, I'm gay, oh, wait, this, 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 and this, and there's so many negative repercussions of being a homosexual in the period of which he was. But, you know, it's like, okay, not that that explains or makes anything that he did okay, but it gives a little light to the situation. With her, I really have no idea. Fast forward, and he texts her back, and he was like, thank you for still being here. And she is, like, super, like, heartfelt, and it's really phony bullshit. And she's like, I would never leave you. You're the love of my life. You're my boyfriend. You're my heart. I'd never leave you. And it's like, what the fuck are you on? Like, what kind of game are you playing? I need to understand. I need to understand.
Well, you won't.
I won't, but the bitch is due for a second attempt at parole this May. Oh, sorry, I jumped ahead of myself. So then at one point he goes for a walk and they're still texting, and then she's like, okay, when are you going to be back for your walk? Okay, when you come back for your walk, are you going to do it? And then he starts freaking out again. And so then she texts him, and then, like, he's like, oh, I don't think I'm going to do it. Like, he's really freaking out at this point. He's panicking. And it's like, okay, like, any sane person would take this as a moment to take him off the ledge from committing suicide. No, she texts him and goes, I thought you wanted to do this. The time is right and you're ready. You just need to do it. You can't keep living this way. You just need to do it like you did last time and not think about it and just do it, babe. You can't keep doing this every day. Conrad, I already told you, I'll take care of your family. Everyone will take care of your family and make sure they won't be alone, and people will help them get through it. We talked about this. They will be okay and they will accept it. People who commit suicide don't think much and they just do it.
I really hate how she texts.
Mm-hmm. I really hate her existence.
Well, yeah, but she just, like, her whole thing is reiteration.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said it's something that has to do with she just needs this control over Conrad. And I don't get why, but she does for whatever reason.
It still just, it doesn't make sense, because even if you do want control over him, like, why have him kill himself?
I don't know. So then, and it gets even better. Not better, but, like, it gets even crazier. And he goes and he texts her back and he says, I know. It just drives me more crazy thinking about my family. And she goes, exactly. You just need to do it, Conrad, or I'm going to get you help.
That is a weird threat.
That is a very weird threat. And then she goes, you can't keep doing this every day. And he goes, okay, I'm going to do it today. She texts back, do you promise? And he goes, yeah, I promise, babe. I have to do it now. Like, right now, where do I go? Oh, and you can't break a promise, she texts back. And she was like, just go to a quiet parking lot or something. Be alone. Have your time. Go somewhere where you know you won't get caught. You can find a place. I know you can. And if you don't find a place to... Not finding a place to go isn't an excuse. Are you mad yet?
There is a reason why I haven't revisited this case in quite a while.
I had it saved because it just pisses me off so much. Like, I think I typed up these notes and got everything ready, like, November. And I just couldn't. Like, I got so mad. I was like, if I talk about this right now, I'm going to fucking fuming. And then she lost her appeal, and I was like, So here we are. And so she was like, well, you can go to a park and ride. And she was like, well, it's like a parking lot. And she was like, either that or, you know, go to a beach. And
then he ends up at a Kmart.
He ends up at a Kmart, as we already know. So skip ahead. They spend the rest of July 12th texting pretty much back and forth. And it's pretty much just, yes, you need to do it. Yes, you need to do it. And it's just really frustrating. So I'm not going to drag everyone through that. Sorry, I'm just skipping ahead. Yeah, it is. I literally have everything. Like, I have the full, I pulled the full transcription of all of their texts from just, well, I have all of their texts, period, because they were all in the open court case. But I obviously notched down to just the ones from the day before he died and the day he died. And she even goes to the point where she says, you've got this. I believe in you. Did you delete the messages? Like, as in, she already knows she's done something wrong. And I think, like, at some point in her sick, twisted brain, she was like, hey, yo, whoa, maybe, you know, maybe I should. But, like, dumbass, even if you delete them, they're not gone forever. And he was like, yeah, I deleted them, but you're going to keep messaging me. And she goes, I'm going to keep messaging you until you turn on the generator. Okay. And he goes, well, I'm bringing my sisters out for ice cream. So, like, he's even living up to his normal life. Like, I think, especially knowing the fact that he got out of the car at one point and she even gets him to get back in the car, I think knowing that, I think he really didn't think he was going to do it even up until he did it. Because especially knowing, like, he just took his sisters out for ice cream. Like, he's thinking about his family. Like, this isn't someone who's suicidal on their own. Which is why it's like, well, that's why your bitch ass is in jail. Anyway, I have a lot of feelings about this one, guys. So then he goes and he drives off to the Kmart and texts her and, or she texts him and she was like, okay, you can do this. And he's like, okay, I'm almost there. And she's like, okay. And then he doesn't text her back. And she's like, oh, please answer me. I'm scared. Are you okay? I love you. Please answer. You're at your dad's. Cameron told me, or Camden. I said it right the first time. Cameron told me, I'll get you help soon, I guess. I thought you actually did it. And that is the last text. So it's believed that she coerces him back in the car over the phone, like over an actual phone call, which is the more like frustrating thing. Cause it's like, people are like, oh, there's no physical evidence. And it's like, but she admitted it to people, but then like they couldn't, it ended up being this whole thing with court and they're like, oh, we can't prove it. And I'm like, I fucking hate you all. And you know what? I'm kind of glad that she's going to rot in prison. And it's really frustrating to think, like, she, thank God, got, thank God, was, you know, found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Unfortunately, she was only sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. she ends up even getting time served. So, like, throughout the time that she was throughout the time that the trial was going on, she was in prison. So her lawyer fights to get time served. And so she ends up only really serving 15 months in actual prison, because there's a difference between prison while you're in court and prison. So she gets 15 months. She actually today, January 13th, just lost her first appeal for parole. She's eligible for parole again in May of 2020. I don't know how that's going to work, because that's technically the end of her sentence, assuming she's done like good behavior and everything like that. But all in all, I think she should be forced to live in solitary confinement for the rest of her life and have no social interactions. Her and Brock Turner both, as far as I'm concerned, can go rot in the same hell pit together. Actually, you know what? She can have social interaction. She can have interactions with Brock Turner. That's it.
I mean, if there's one thing the media is good for, it's spreading the faces of people who are guilty.
Yeah. So
she's not going to have a normal life.
No, not at all. Not at all. Just like Casey Anthony, that bitch killed that beautiful little girl. I said it. I'm allowed to have my opinion. This is my podcast. I do what I want. What? Casey Anthony did kill that little girl.
I'm not saying she didn't.
Oh. And OJ killed Nicole while we're saying things. So, once she's sentenced, so she, like I said, she just literally today, she was denied parole, which is a thank God situation. But it's one of those things that is really, really frustrating to kind of have to hear through this case. And it's a crazy case in and of itself, but some good things have come out of it. You know, we've gotten a lot of awareness that there are crazy toxic people like this, and Conrad's mom has done a lot. Conrad's mom has gotten super involved. The Northeast Maritime Institute, they actually have a scholarship fund that's in his name. And people, a lot of awareness has come out of this case. So it sucks that we had to lose someone like Connor, who we probably didn't even need to fucking lose. And we probably wouldn't have lost had it not been for Michelle. Whether or not things could have gone differently in his life is something that we will probably never know, but it's super, super frustrating to think about the fact that, like, she had so many opportunities to get him help and so many opportunities to fix things and make things better for him, and she just didn't because she's a selfish, self-righteous bitch. It is what it is. But, yeah, that is the story of Conrad Roy III, and like I said, if nothing else, we got a lot of awareness out of his story. So it's your turn.
Aren't we glad that I don't cover murders?
Yes.
I can always leave this off on a pretty okay note. If you had to be the second story, we'd all go home sad. But guess where we're going to?
I don't know. I give up.
Aw, we made it all the way across the country.
California?
Yeah.
Yee!
Guess what I'm talking about.
If you say you're talking about the Queen Mary.
Yep.
Bitch!
You took too long.
Bitch!
We are on episode 19. You have plenty of time. Bitch. Suck it. No. Bitch.
There are so many things. You could have talked about Alcatraz. You could have talked about all of California. Los Angeles. Sacramento. San Francisco. It's all fucking haunted. Why'd you take the Queen Mary?
Because I wanted to talk about the Queen Mary.
All right, fine.
Thank you. You can talk about Alcatraz. That's your place anyways. You like prisons.
I do. I love prison.
All right. So let's get into some history.
I'm ready.
Which is literally why the story is longer than usual. It's because of the history. Ow, my head. All right. So the Queen Mary, originally known as the RMS Queen Mary, is now a retired British ocean liner. So it had actually been sailing between the years of 1936 and 1967, so that's about 31 years, for the Cunard White Star Line, which, if you don't know, those are actually two separate companies who did, like, a joint venture thing.
Okay.
It was built by John Brown and Company, as well as part of a planned two-ship weekly express service between Southampton and New York. And the whole reason why was because, well, the German, Italian, and French companies in the late 1920s and early 1930s had already started building, like, super liner ships that were really fast and quick. So this was to combat that and bring in more income. So what I think is really funny is the way that the Queen Mary got its name.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's so great.
So the legend is that the ship was named after Mary of Teck, who was a consort of King George V. So apparently Cunard intended to name the ship Victoria, after Queen Victoria, so who they called the greatest queen. And apparently when the company reps went to the king to ask permission to name the ship after Britain's greatest queen, he replied by saying his wife, Mary, would be delighted. So he just kind of played them, like, majorly.
I'm not even... Okay.
You know, they're the ones who got tricked. So company officials, after having that said to them, meant that they had to go along with it, and they named the ship Queen Mary. So... Although, like, there are officials who have denied this story, but there was a Washington Post editor, Felix Morley, who had sailed on the ship during the maiden voyage and had apparently been told by Sir Percy Bates, who was the chairman of the Cunard Line, that that is what happened. So there's actually a little bit of fact behind it. It's not like just a random legend. The other story that people think led to the naming of the Queen Mary is just that it was a compromise between Cunard and the White Star. As Cunard had a tradition of naming their ships with names ending in IAs, so like Victoria. And then the White Star line used names ending in IC.
Okay.
So Mary was her compromise because it ends in neither. You can't have it, then I can't have it.
If you can't.
No one gets it.
That's literally what that bitch just said.
Yes. So the maiden voyage for the Queen Mary was on May 27th of 1936. And they had actually won the Blue Riband that August. Promptly lost it to the SS Normandy in 1937 and then took it back in 1938 until 1952. And the Blue Riband was, I don't actually know if they still give them out, but it was an unofficial award given to the fastest passenger liner that crossed the Atlantic Ocean with regular service. And fun fact about that, because of the Gulf Stream and the weather systems in the Atlantic, westbound voyages actually were, like, they west and eastbound voyages had to be considered in different ways, because westbound voyages averaged lower speeds due to it being harder to sail.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, most people would probably just be like, oh, I didn't know that. Because I didn't think about that fact. I don't weather.
Chloe! That's not my job.
Chloe! Weather for me!
Weather for us all.
So during World War II, the Queen Mary was converted into a troop ship that ferried Allied soldiers around. So it wasn't just for the plebs.
For the plebs?
It was also for the troops.
The plebs.
So the ship itself had, like, they did a whole lot to retrofit it for war. They covered all of, like, the woodwork with leather. They stripped out a bunch of stuff. They painted the ship a camouflage gray color. And thanks to that color that it was painted and due to the Queen Mary's speed and stealth, she was nicknamed the Gray Ghost.
I remember that.
You do?
I remember that.
So she, along with her sister ship, the largest troop ships in the entire Alliance fleet, and were virtually impossible for the U-boats to catch due to their high speeds and zigzag sailing patterns.
That's how that bitch ran other bitches over, though. I'm sorry. I spoiled part of your story. Keep going.
That's okay. I can tell that story. I didn't fully put that in because I was trying to keep it shorter. But, so there were supposed to be three liners to be converted. It was the Queen Mary, the sister ship, which I can't find my notes about, the Queen Elizabeth, that's the name, and then the SS Normandy was supposed to be one of them. The SS Normandy got sunk. So, we lost that ship.
RIP.
So, would you like to tell them about the ship being run over?
Oh, I don't remember much of it. I just know she was doing that zigzag pattern bullshit. Yeah. And sis was going. She was going. She was like Serena. She was like, And then next thing you know, and then she ran that bitch over by accident.
Yeah. So, technically, the whole reason why the ship got ran over was because Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth were both told, under no circumstances should you stop. So they just kept going.
Yep.
The ship was there and they were like, well, can't stop. Under orders, keep going.
Okay, I'm done.
There were other like helper boats around in the area. And the captain of the Queen Mary actually immediately after crashing into the other boat. And the Queen Mary was fine, by the way. That boat just, like, snapped.
Hold on. We got a beach ball.
Beach ball.
Okay, say something.
Going to the car wash.
Oh my god. Okay, you're good. Continue.
Yes, but the captain of the Queen Mary immediately after the more people could have died, but there was still like 200 casualties or something.
Bitch.
Yeah, it was quite a bit. Could have been worse, but, you know.
I mean, yeah, it could have been worse.
So what I found particularly interesting is that we almost didn't have the Queen Mary in California.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so there is, during one particular transport of troops, they were going from Scotland, somewhere else, I don't remember. But they were sailing, and there was, like, a really big, like, huge, harsh gale going. And this is an actual quote from Dr. Norval Carter of the 110th Station Hospital. And he was on board there at the time. But apparently the Queen Mary, quote, damn near capsized. One moment the top deck was at its usual height and then swoom. It... Down, over, and forward she went. She returned to operations in July of 1947. So both her and the Queen Elizabeth.
Okay. So like air conditioning is pretty common at this point, but still like a high class thing. Like kind of like how only some homes have.
Fuck you and you. And you, I hate your friends and they hate me too.
All right, so it's recording again and it has been for a couple minutes now and I'm just going to let this happen now.
Yeah.
All right, continue.
Where was I? Oh. So after the two ships returned to operation, they ended up dominating the transatlantic passenger transportation market, essentially until the 1950s when plane travel became more common and more widely accepted.
Thank you, Wright Brothers and Pan Am.
By the mid-1960s, the Queen Mary was severely aged and was actually starting to operate for a loss for the Cunard Company. So they ended up retiring her from service in 1967, with the last voyage being on October 31st of 1967. So on that trip, once they got across the ocean, the ship was brought around to Long Beach, California, and permanently moored there after arriving on December 9th, 1967. And that's because Long Beach bought the Queen Mary.
We just want this boat.
Yeah, the city just bought it. They were like, yeah, I want it.
We going to have this boat. This will be our boat. No one can have the boat.
No. So when the Queen Mary was bought by Long Beach, it was decided that essentially most of the areas of the ship below the sea deck was to be ripped out and cleared to make space for what was supposed to be the Living Sea Museum. And then they took the first class rooms and renovated it into a hotel aboard the ship. But there were no second class, third class, or crew cabins left intact after that. So you can't see that there.
Aww.
Yep, nope. You can only see what was the first class rooms. That's or cabins.
That's no fun.
So I kind of skipped over a lot of history here because it got really boring. But
that's okay.
Essentially,
we're here for the haunts.
Yeah. So essentially, the hotel and like the hotel, the ship, and just the property in general had exchanged hands a couple times and were ran by
a couple times.
And it was only in 1980 that it became apparent that the existing system really wasn't working for them.
No shit.
Yeah, it was real bad.
I would have never guessed.
So that museum that I had talked about a little bit earlier, that had closed within a decade due to low ticket sales and because their fish kept dying.
What?
They kept dying.
Somebody was poisoning the fish. That's not funny.
Do you think the fish haunt the Queen Mary too?
Yes. I'm just picturing like...
blah, blah.
No, Mr. Krabs.
Oh my god.
Anyway, continue. I'm horrible.
So, it had been decided that rather than having multiple groups running the different parts of the Queen Mary, because they had like one for the property, one for the hotel, one for the museum, like they were just different groups, They decided that they needed one single person or company to run everything.
All right, all right.
And we did get that. We got Jack Rather, who was a local millionaire who had sailed on the Queen Mary quite a few times, and he ended up loving the ship. So he decided to sign a 66-year lease, random number, but you know, with the city of Long Beach to operate the entire property. After his death in 1984, his company, Rather Port Properties, continued to operate the attraction until 1988, when the holdings were bought by, wait for it,
I'm ready,
Walt Disney World.
I know.
Old company. So Disney, when they had it, never marketed the Queen Mary as a Disney property.
No. Why would they ever do such a thing?
Well, I mean, maybe they would have gotten more business. I don't know.
No.
So, unfortunately, the Queen Mary struggled financially from the late 80s through the early 90s. And Disney had originally hoped to turn the attraction around with Port Disney, which was a planned resort on the adjacent docks and included a theme park known as Disney Sea.
Now it's in Tokyo.
Yes, it is. So, however, the plans fell through, and then in 1992, Disney gave up the lease on the ship. And, like Sierra said, Disney Sea ended up, like, the plans for it ended up being recycled and built a decade later in Japan as Tokyo Disney Sea.
Yep.
So, they left, obviously. They don't still have that place. So, when Disney gone, the Hotel Queen Mary closed all of its attractions on December 31st of 1992. That's the year my brother was born.
Your brother's old as shit.
He's not old as shit. I mean, he's over, you know, a quarter of a decade old, but...
He's old as shit and he's short as shit.
Decade? Century.
A quarter of a decade. Oh my god. Continue your damn story.
Leave me alone. On February 5th of 1993, so not that long after, that was like 2 months, more like a month, the RMS Foundation signed a 5-year lease to act as operators of the property. In 1995, that lease was extended to 20 years, although they ended up bringing down the extent of the lease, so they weren't operating the entire property anymore, just really the ship. And then there was Queen Seaport Development, which was a new company established specifically to control the real estate adjacent to the vessel. And in 1998, they were giving a 66-year lease.
Okay. Well, again, with the 66 years, but...
Yeah, I don't know why it's 66, but that's what they decided on.
Probably some devilish bullshit, but okay.
Slap one more six on there.
No!
Once again, we can't keep anybody in this area. So the real estate control changed hands when Queen Seaport Development filed for Chapter 11. And then the lease was sold to a group called Save the Queen.
The Corgis?
No, Save the Queen.
Corgis?
This was a group specifically managed by Hostmark Hospitality Group, who then started the renovation of a lot of the ship. Currently, the ship is now leased to the real estate company Urban Commons. And they're continuing a lot of those renovations.
Oh, well, that's good. At least they're continuing the renovations. I wasn't sure because I know they do, like, the whole, like, Haunted Queen Mary, like, Halloween special. I'm stealing your thunder. I'm going to shut up.
Wow. I can't tell my own story.
I'm sorry. I'm going to shut up.
Anyway. So, history's over. It's time for the hunt.
Ghosts, 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 ghosts. Anyway, continue.
So, we know that the Queen Mary is considered one of the most haunted places in America.
Yes.
Like, that's pretty common knowledge. So, it's been claimed that there is apparently as many as 150 known spirits on the Queen Mary. That's a lot of spirits for one place.
That's a lot of fucking ghosts.
Of the 150 known spirits on there, there's a good amount of them who were probably reported deaths, because there were 49 reported deaths on the ship.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's a lot. So, what are these places? Well, we're going to start with what's it called? Shaft Alley. I'm not the one who named it, but it's called Shaft Alley.
Okay, I'm done.
So 50 feet below water level is the Queen Mary's engine room, or if it's still there. If not, it's where the engine room was. And that's said to be a particular paranormal hotbed. In Shaft Alley, there's this one door that's pretty infamous. It's called Door 13. And that's because it crushed at least 2 men to death at different points during the ship's history. Oh!
Titanic, is that you?
One of the deaths we have a lot more history about. And it occurred during a routine watertight door drill in 1966 when an 18-year-old crew member died. So he was young.
Oh, poor baby.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't die right away, was one of the things I learned. He had been crushed. The doors unsealed. They got him to the hospital, but there was just such serious injury done to him that he died. So he didn't really stand much of a chance.
Oh, that got really sad really fast.
That's what happens when you talk about hauntings. It's said that you can see this crew member walking the length of Shaft Alley before disappearing by door 13. So he apparently is dressed in blue coveralls and sports a beard, a little scruff.
A little scruff.
Yep. And people have reported the sounds of somebody running behind them and whistling, while others state that they have actually had spots of grease appear on their faces in patterns that look like fingerprints. You mean you don't want fingerprint grease on your face?
No.
So if you are down there, you might also run into somebody wandering the halls asking if you have seen his wrench, and then he'll disappear. So you won't see him again.
I don't want it.
You sure?
Yes.
So there are 2 other locations that are also pretty active, and that's the first and second class swimming pools. Neither pool has been used in many years, and that's because they fall into disrepair over the years, but also because you couldn't safely use them as a pool, based on the different renovations that happened. So in the first class swimming pool, which has been closed for over 3 decades, you can apparently see women in 1930s style swimwear wandering the decks near the pool.
I don't want that. Why not? I didn't ask for this.
You don't want to meet the woman?
I want to go stay on the ship.
You might have to meet the woman then. Oh. There have also been reports of sounds of splashing and wet footprints leading from the deck to the changing rooms. And there's supposedly a young girl who can be seen clutching her teddy bear.
See, that's some Shining, Stranger Things type bullshit that I'm not trying to deal with today.
Wait, there's more.
I didn't ask for more.
So aside from the girl, people have specifically reported seeing a woman in a tennis skirt who walks down the stairs and disappears behind a pillar. And then a woman in an old wedding gown who's standing next to the pool with a little boy in a suit. Then we go to the second class pool. And that is where apparently the spirit of Jackie, who's another little girl, can be seen and heard in the area.
Where did all these dead little girls come from?
I don't know. Well, so for Jackie, allegedly the young girl had drowned in the pool during the ship's sailing days and has refused to move on. And investigators have said to have actually captured her voice and the sound of her laughter.
No, that's not a little girl. That's Satan. Let me break it down to you really quick. Annabelle.
Okay, yeah, so this is what makes it worse. There's no known record of drownings occurring on the ship.
Bitch, didn't I tell you? Didn't I tell... Jesus, Jesus, but, Jesus.
But, the other thing is, we don't know if there had been records that had just gotten lost or anything. It's been a while.
I mean, yeah, you're probably right.
So then there's also the Queen's Salon, and this once served as the ship's first class lounge, and apparently a woman in a white evening gown can be seen dancing alone in the shadows of the corners of the room. So not just by herself, nobody else.
Okay.
Because that's not creepy.
Not creepy at all, no.
So in the first class staterooms, there have been numerous occurrences that have happened, not in like any one particular one, but they just have some happening. There is, like, there have been reports of a tall, dark-haired man in a 1930s style suit, and then also water running and lights turning on in the middle of the night. And then there's apparently your phone might ring in the early morning hours with no one on the other end.
If my phone rings and ain't anybody, listen, the only person that better be calling me that early in the morning and being dead silent is Jesus. Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you.
In the third class, there was a children's playroom where apparently a baby's cry has often been heard. And it's thought that that is the cry of an infant boy who died shortly after birth. So, just to make it a little sad again.
That hurt.
So, one of the notoriously haunted rooms is Suite B340.
Is that the one that Ryan stayed in?
Probably, because that's the one that the Queen Mary Hotel actually talks and puts forward. So this is the room that apparently in 1948, there's a British third class passenger, Walter J. Adamson, who passed away in the room. So I'm not quite sure the details of his death. There wasn't really anything on it. But apparently in 1966, so this was before, like, it was fully a hotel. A woman staying in the room stated that she was woken up when the bed covers were pulled off of her, and then she saw a man standing at the foot of her bed. So terrified, obviously, she screamed
and burned the ship down.
No, she didn't burn the ship down. That's why we have a ship there.
Fuck.
But she rang for the steward, but when she did that, the man apparently just vanished into thin air.
Okay.
So there have been other guests who have stayed in the room. And have reported hearing someone knocking on the door in the middle of the night, or seeing, like, the bathroom lights come on. And then there have been maids who've complained that they would find the bathroom water running even if no one had been staying in the room for days.
Maybe we should go.
So, there's one maid in particular who said that she had been making the bed, and after she put the bed covers on, they were immediately ripped off. So... pretty haunted.
I would literally sleep on the street.
Yeah. So for a long while, the room was actually closed off to guests, and then they reopened it. So now you can stay there.
Right. Like, I'm sorry, if I wasn't volunteering for like a ghost experience, no way in fuck would I stay there. Like, if I voluntarily like knew I was getting into like a haunted experience, sure. As like a regular like day to day patron, my ass would be sleeping in my car.
So I got two more rooms. We have the Maritania room. I think that's how you say it. Oh, well. So there were two women in the year of 1980-something, because I left off the last number.
Good job.
My 9-key sticks, I think, so that might have been it. It might have been 1989. I don't know.
It probably was 1989.
So two women were sent to clean the room for a VIP reception. And when they had entered, they found a single passenger sitting on a chair in the middle of the dance floor, and he didn't say a word.
I would have burned him alive.
When a third woman came in, because I'm not sure if they just started cleaning around him or whatever. I don't know. They didn't say. But when a third woman came in to help, she remarked that the passenger just stared at her and then asked her to move.
Okay.
Then, when the employees called for security, the passengers just faded away in front of them. So you got three people all saying the same thing.
That's a hard no.
And then the last room I have on here is the Mayfair room. And this had served as the ship's beauty salon, although now it acts as offices for the hotel. So Moving forward to 2001, so a little more recent, a member of the accounting staff had come in to work around 5:30 in the morning, and she stated that just something felt off. And if you haven't learned anything from this podcast, it should be trust your gut. It's usually right. So while she was sitting at her desk going about her office task, she had felt unusually cold, and then later on she felt someone brush up against the back of her chair, despite being the only one there. A couple minutes after, the employee saw a transparent figure in white just walk across the room and pass through the door. Through it.
Damn. So
ma'am.
Yes.
That was late.
Yes.
So if you want to visit the Queen Mary, know this. Yes, she has been featured on Ghost Hunters.
Yes.
Because they like paranormal. You can go for yourself to the Queen Mary, and you can stay there on the hotel, obviously, because it's functioning. You can also go on some of the tours. They have a number of them, including, like, their Dark Harbor, which is that Halloween season special investigation, or tour. They're also open to investigation, so you can do that. Like I said, they opened up Stateroom B340, so you can stay there if you're brave enough, but I am not, so I will not.
I thought we were going to stay there.
No.
Oh.
You can stay there. I will stay in a different room. And then if you need a break or just like a snack in between investigations, they also have functioning restaurants, and there's a museum there as well now, so you can go to those too. So it's a fun time.
Can we at least go to the museum?
Yeah, we can go to the museum.
All right, lit. Saw, dude.
And that is the history of the Queen Mary.
Woo!
And only a small fraction of the haunted stories.
I feel like, yeah, we could do a whole episode on the Queen Mary alone. Yeah, I already know our 25th like episode, like our 25th anniversary is going to be a long one, because I already know exactly what I'm covering. But yeah, that was our 19th episode. It's kind of crazy to think we've been doing this for 19 weeks. It's weird. But anyway, thank you guys again for listening to another episode of This One Goes Up Late. I am sorry, not sorry. If you hear random things I forgot to cut out, I'm sorry, not sorry. My computer had a stroke and I'm just trying to get it to y'all in time, but it'll probably be late.
And I will probably be asleep.
I've got 40 minutes to get this up by I have 40 minutes to get this up by 11:59.
I will be asleep.
Okay. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening.
As usual, please go follow us on all the social medias. You can find us at Haunted Tourism Podcast. Send in stories to our Gmail. It's the same handle.
HauntedTourismPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. Stories, suggestions, because I'm lazy and I don't want to think about things to figure out. Queen Mary was easy because, like, everybody knows that.
Yeah, we both did semi-well-known ones today.
Yeah, you probably won't get that again for a while.
No, probably not.
Ugh.
Anyway, but yeah, and then if you don't want spooky stuff, you can do postcardbound.com, and that's where we travel and shit.
I swear I'll post something soon. It's a lot of work right now.
Yeah, we're getting into the hang of a lot of things, and I just had a new job, and Timmy might be going to a new job, and there's just a lot. There's a lot happening, but it's okay. Things are great, and we're going to get the show ready. But other than that, we want to thank you guys again so much for listening, and stay spooky.
Listen if you dare.
Bye.
Bye.